And you're listening to Ozarks at Large. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Christina and I have worked together on Weekend Ozarks at Large for...
Close to a year.
The show itself, a version of Ozarks at Large at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, been on the air at KUF for about 20 years.
So it's one of the staple Sunday morning programs.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
It feels funny to say that, but yeah. And what we try to do with Weekend Ozarks at Large, because Monday through Friday, the show is on at different times. It's not on in the morning. And when we first went to a daily show almost 3 years ago, the Sunday show, I was doing it by myself, I think. And it was just kind of a collection of some of our favorite stories from the previous week.
Because the daily show is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yes, it is. And so now there was a sixth. But when you, Ify was producing Sunday,
yes.
And then she moved. And then when you came along, you had the idea... said, why don't we do some new material on Sunday? With the idea that Sunday morning is a different kind of time than noon or 7 p.m.
Right, and kind of a different sort of feel to the show, too.
Right.
You know, kind of, I don't know if relaxed is the right word, but I mean, easy like a Sunday morning.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So we've expanded the show, and many Sundays it's almost, not entirely, all new.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. All of this to say, the reason that we can give you 6 days of local and regional news and information and entertainment is because of listener contributions.
Right. Listener contributions make up almost all of our budget.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, underwriting, but we do. We raise almost 90% of our budget on our own, and 60% of that comes from listeners just like you.
The biggest slice of the pie is from listeners.
Right. And if you would like to call now and support Ozarks at Large on Sunday mornings, the numbers to call are 575-5823 or 800-522-5823 or online at supportkuaf.com.
We did want, with this new sort of vision of Weekend Ozarks at Large, we did want to have still some of that feel of this is what happened the past 6 or 7 days.
Right.
And to that end, Timothy Dennis has helped us out in the last... He started working here in August.
In August, yes, of last year. Yeah.
And what he has done is because he works very hard on the newscast portion that begins our daily show every day. He produces it, talks to the people, gets the interviews.
Right.
And so he then puts together... at the end of the week, this sort of week in review.
Week in review. And here it is for this week.
One worker was killed and 3 others were injured after an accident at a nuclear power plant in Russellville last Sunday morning. The workers were performing regular maintenance at Arkansas Nuclear One, which is owned by Entergy Arkansas. Terry Young is a spokesman for the facility.
As we were moving a generator stator, which is a very large component at Arkansas Nuclear One, that stator fell as it was being moved out of the turbine building.
Young says that Entergy is deeply saddened by the loss of one of its employees. He says that the accident poses no danger to the public and no radiation was released. Entergy, along with state and federal officials, will be conducting an investigation as to the cause of the accident. The Arkansas House of Representatives on Monday completed the 3rd override of a veto by Governor Mike Beebe. The veto was of a bill that requires voters in the state to show a photo ID before casting a vote. The House voted 52-45 for the override. The governor said the bill is a solution looking for a problem. Stephen Meeks, a Republican representative from Greenbrier, spoke for the override, saying the bill is a needed protection.
We are trying to protect the integrity of one of the most fundamental rights that we have here in America. And as a matter of fact, when I talk to citizens across the state, they tell me time and time again that this is a common sense solution. Why aren't they doing this? It doesn't make sense.
Representative John Walker, a Democrat from Little Rock, spoke against the override, taking issue with Meeks and others' assertions that the bill protects rights.
But there is no justification that he has for the belief that there is voter fraud in Arkansas or any place else that's of a substantive nature, anything more than a token number of people who may not properly respect the exercise of the vote.
Supporters of the bill have referred to former Democratic Representative Hudson Hallam's guilty plea to voter fraud for destroying absentee ballots as an indication for the bill's need. Opponents claim that a voter ID requirement wouldn't have stopped that instance of fraud, and that the requirement will negatively affect the voter turnout of poor, older, and minority voters. Although the federal sequestration cut Federal Aviation Administration funds for air traffic controllers at many municipal airports across the state, one Northwest Arkansas city has decided to provide funding for its own tower for the time being. Tuesday night, Fayetteville aldermen voted to spend just more than $20,000 per month out of the city's general fund to continue tower operations at Drake Field. Airport Executive Director Ray Boudreaux says that the decision by the city council was a wise one.
Well, it's about flight safety. It's about the flying public. It's about the number of folks that use our airport that should have that service. The other problem would be that if we allowed it to close, reopening it, even if the decision was reversed, would be very, very difficult, because the FAA, if the tower was closed, would then be allowed to remove all the equipment and to essentially strip the building, and it would be extremely difficult to get the tower back in service.
Under the current contract with CI Squared, the FAA pays for 100% of the operational costs of the tower, but with the sequestration order, that contract would have ceased on this very day. However, the city's emergency contract for service with CI Squared will take over tomorrow. Boudreaux says that he is unsure whether the same number of staff members will be used to operate the tower, but other changes to operations will be made.
The one thing we did do in order to stay with a reasonable budget for the cost was to reduce the hours that the tower will operate. The tower currently operates from 6 in the morning until 10 at night. We reduced those hours down to 8 in the morning and 10 at night, essentially because there's just a very, very small amount of traffic that occurs before 8 and after 8 at night.
As part of the city's decision to pay for continued air traffic control operations at the airport, aldermen also approved resolutions to authorize the city attorney to take legal action to delay closure of the tower and to express displeasure with the FAA decision to close federally contracted towers at airports across the country, including the very one at Drake Field. The Federal Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration has allayed Governor Mike Beebe's initial concerns about the recent pipeline rupture and oil spill in Mayflower. Wednesday, the governor spoke with Cynthia Quarterman, head of the agency which runs under the Department of Transportation. Matt DeCampbell, the governor's spokesman, says that the agency answered a number of the governor's questions concerning the pipeline's history and how the cleanup effort will continue. He says the agency will be working towards answering some fundamental questions about the pipeline.
Once they reach it, it has to pass a number of tests before the pipeline can be restarted, and it's probably going to be some time before that occurs, both to determine what happened and to determine that it's replaced and safe before it can be started again.
DeCampbell says ExxonMobil will most likely continue to cooperate in investigations of the accident. He says regular pipeline operations will stay off until the oil company addresses the many questions public officials have. As the state investigation gets underway looking at the oil spill, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel toured the site Wednesday where the pipeline ruptured. He says it left him with more questions than answers. He also told reporters he's bothered by how ExxonMobil, which owns the 65-year-old pipeline, has minimized the accident.
I have been reminded by Exxon's representatives that this is a relatively small spill and cleanup is going just great. I hope that they realize that to the homeowners in this area, it is not small, it is catastrophic. And for those who fear for their drinking water, things are not great.
McDaniel also said this highlights the need for improvement to pipeline maintenance, inspections, and safety standards. From the Herald and Blanche Calk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Ozarks at Large.